Welcome to the Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, a show that helps you learn how planners can generate significantly more wealth now. Nathan will answer your questions about business or personal finance, or how to increase current cash flows and generate retirement savings to make sure you're on the right path, and so much more. Whatever your financial goal, Nathan can get you there faster. And now, here's your host, Nathan Ross.
Welcome to this week's Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. We're glad you could join us once again today. And before we get started, I just want to remind you that if you hear something that sounds interesting today and you think, well, gee, that might be good for me, please check with your existing advisors, financial, legal, accounting, tax, real estate, et cetera, and let's make sure that what you heard was correct, and then more importantly, that it applies to your facts and circumstances in a positive way. If you don't have advisors currently, feel free to go to our website at beaplannershow.com. Go to the forms link and fill out at least step one, form one, and if you'll fill that out and then go schedule a call at the link right next to it on my call scheduler, I'll be happy to spend some time with you on the phone to determine if we might be able to sync up with what you're looking to accomplish. And it's, you know, it seems like the expectation of most people is that, hey, I've got to change what I'm doing. And so, you know, that's the context in which we'll look at your data and try to figure out, you know, is there anything we can do? Or are you in a situation? I know I get people that come to me often for tax planning advice, because that's primarily what I focus on, is planning versus preparation. I have associates that will handle that. But, you know, when you have a double, you know, two W-2 couple, you know, relatively high income, there's not a whole lot one can do as a planner to cut current year taxes. However, you really need to consider tax planning on the go forward horizon, because there are things that we can get in position to take advantage of. And the fact that you have, perhaps, if you've got a double income, you know, high income couple, there's some things you can do now that will make you know, your future much brighter, at least from a cash flow and a tax perspective. But anyway, I spent some time earlier today, actually, catching up on my articles on the news page out on beaplannershow.com. And I apologize, I haven't been keeping up, but I put a bevy of them out there today. Let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And if you recall, we've been using news articles to illustrate tax concepts, real estate concepts, etc. And today, I wanted to catch us up on the debt tracker. And actually, I've got a typo on that. I'll have to fix that on a break. If you'll click through to the link, if you are wanting to follow the articles, if you'll click through to the link, this is on our news page under resources on the Be a Planner Show. com, and the current national debt as of today, I believe, let's see, is today the 22nd? Oh, no, it's 23rd. I'm sorry. So as of yesterday, the current, and this is the part of the deficit that we actually, or the part of the debt that we actually book on our country's balance sheet. It's not the real number. The real number is probably 6 to 7 times higher, but it's now $35,193,000,000,000 plus dollars. That's crazy. And that's up, let's see, over the last 90 days when I last showed it, it's up about $348 billion and some change. I've got a typo there, I notice, on that number. But bottom line is we're tracking along on a pretty brisk clip. Let's see here. If we divide $349 billion, let me get the right amount of zeros here, by 90, what does that give us? It's roughly 38 billion a day? It's at least that. Let me think. Well, I'll fix this link on the break and I'll get that calculation right. But it's a lot of money. And, you know, the current fiscal year, and you've heard me speak about this many times on the air, the current fiscal year ends September 30th, 2024, and the interest on the debt will be over the $1 trillion mark for the first time in our country's history. Approximately $1.1 trillion is the pace that we're on now, and you know, it's just hard to fathom. In 10 years, it's currently the fourth largest component of the annual federal expenditure and or budget, if you want to call it that. And it's kind of a misnomer, I guess, when you think about it. And it's right behind, well, you've got Medicare/Medicaid in the first slot. You've got Social Security in the second slot. You've got defense spending in the third slot. And at the moment, you've got interest on the debt. And I was just going to look if I actually go to the U.S. debt clock. We are getting very close. In fact, I may be, let's see here. It's going to take a minute for this to come up. But bottom line is we will be surpassing defense spending before we get to the end of September. In terms of being the third spot on the budget list or the priority, first four spots, interest will move from the fourth spot up into number three. And by the year 2034, 10 years out, it'll be in the number one spot. And the amount of interest at that point will be somewhere in the 50. I mean, the cumulative debt at that point will be somewhere in the $55 trillion tier. So, you know, you're at $35 trillion now. We've got, according to the Congressional Budget Office, which, you know, they're the government gurus that score all the legislation, and you know, they've penciled out $2.x trillion a year in deficits on average. I think $2.1 trillion, and you know, that's per year. So you can add that up, and you can see that again we'll be in the $55 trillion range. So right now, as we speak, we've actually surpassed defense spending. I'm not sure why. The U.S. debt clock, I was just looking at it. If you pull that site up, it's usdebtclock.org. Even got a nice mobile app. which if you've still got good eyesight, I don't. My eyes are old. I can't really do much with it on the mobile without multi-touching it. And it's such a large amount of data when you look at it. It's really more conducive to the desktop. But interest right now is at $925 billion and some change dollars. The current defense spending for the year is $919. So we have already surpassed interest expense in the current year as now the third largest component of the public debt. It's crazy. And again, we're collecting about approximately $5 trillion a year. We're spending $7 trillion for as far as the eye can see, or 10 years in this case, if you trust the CBO or Congressional Budget Office assumption set. I know different economists will quarrel over what the real number is. Bottom line is, it's way too much. And have you heard anybody really talking much about the debt at the DNC? Excuse me, the DNC convention this week. I didn't. I heard indirectly they were talking about it. They were talking about building 3 million. Excuse me. They were talking about building 3 million homes for lower-income people. They were talking about all sort of goodies that they're going to apply. They're going to, in both camps, are talking about not taxing tips. It's like, okay, I get it. It's going to give you more voters, which just means the rest of us are going to pay more tax. So I'm not necessarily in favor of that, unless you're going to call the fees you pay your tax planner tips. You know, I'm available for tips. If that law becomes available, I might have to serve you some coffee and cupcakes, as we meet. But bottom line is, we'll be looking at how we can all qualify for that, all of my clients, right? So anyway, it's really amazing the goodies that start to be tossed about as if we've got the money. It's like Ross Perot. I'll never forget the debate back in the day when Ross Perot had joined the presidential race, and it was, George Bush was the leading Republican candidate at the time. And I can't remember all the candidates that were on stage. It was probably the first debate when they had at least seven or eight people. And I'll never forget, I believe it was Perot, it may have been Ron Paul, I get them confused, they're both conservatives. But, the moderator had asked each of the participants, well, what's the one program that you would spend money on if you were to be elected? And, of course, it varied by candidate. You know, health care was one issue, strong defense was another. Anyway, they went, education, they went down the list of all those hot spots that you hear bannered about during the campaigns. And I believe it was Ron Paul that said, it was whoever the last candidate was that got to speak. He said, George, that's a great plan you've got. And I can't remember who else, maybe Bob Dole was still in the race at that point. Well, Bob, that's a great plan. And just went on down the list. And finally he said, I just have one question for all you folks. How are we going to pay for it? And that's something that is the last thing in their mind. Why? Because it's going to affect the next several administrations, not theirs. And that's how people in Washington think. Congressmen, the House, the Senate, anybody that's in government that's has anything remotely connected to the spending apparatus, as long as it doesn't affect them negatively while they're in office, they're all for it. Let's spend away. It's somebody else's problem to figure out how to pay for this stuff. And then when the time comes to raise the debt ceiling so we can go borrow more, there's never a discussion about, well, they'll say, oh, we've already paid for, or we've already spent the money. We can't just not pay it now. Well, how about we draw a line in the sand right now and say no more spending? No more spending past whatever the current, or no more borrowing, which directly affects spending the way we run our country. How about we have a rule that we can't spend any more than we've already got in the bank? You know, how about doing that? How about treating it like it's your family budget? And I just, when I look at all the dollars that are being, you know, tossed about during convention week, and it's on both sides. It's not just the Democrats, you know, as much as I like most of Mr. Trump's policies, there are some that I would argue probably won't get paid for. In other words, the benefits won't outweigh the cost. And I think the pay-fors is what we call that, and that's what CBO refers to it as. The pay-fors really need to allow, at least at this moment in our country's history, we need to align the pay-fors with whatever tax breaks we're getting. And I think in large measure, the 2017 Tax Act, the increase in collections was dramatic. Now, the Democrats will never say that. They talk about all the breaks that were given the wealthy. Well, I got news for you. I do a lot of tax returns for people that I won't call wealthy. Now, you know, maybe CBO thinks they are, or Democrats think they are. They've got a surprisingly low standard of wealth when it's you and I, unlike their own. You know, I don't know. I tried not to watch much of the speeches this week. I did see clips. You know, I like YouTube because it cuts out all the extemporaneous stuff. But, you know, I saw Ms. Obama talking about how her parents were suspicious of rich people because they had taken too much. In their mind, there was some limit to how much you could take. And, of course, like most people on the left, doesn't apply to me. You know, you may be shocked to learn that the Obama's net worth is somewhere north of $70 million. Is that too much? Is that not enough? They've got four mansions, four homes that I think the most expensive is a $20 million residence. They've got a $10 million home, I believe it is, in Hawaii. They've got a $8 million home somewhere, and then they've got a mere $1.6 million home in Chicago. And yet they're saying things like they were saying right real time last night. You know, my parents taught us to not take too much. Are you kidding me? And the average left-leaning voter doesn't seem, they seem to be challenged by math. They don't understand there is a limit to the financial resources of our country, just like there is you personally. They are finite resources. There is a limit to how much we can spend, and we're way over. Again, we're $2 trillion over our annual limit if you base the limit on how much we received in tax collections into the federal coffers. Okay, I've gone way past the break. Let's go ahead and take our break, and we'll be back momentarily with more of this week's Be a Planner show, and we'll dig in on some of this possible new administration's tax proposals. We'll be right back with more of this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA. With all you do, your attitude just seems to be so good. How do you keep it? Well,
BeAPlanner.com wants to ask you, when's the last time your tax pro called with a way to save you taxes? Seriously, do you want to work with a planner or a reporter? A planner knows which tax code sections are the best wealth accumulation tools. Less tax, more profit. Learn more at BeAPlanner.com. The Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195. 713-581-0195. Or you can send an email to Nathan at nprross.com. Nathan at nprross.com.
Have you recently joined a real estate mentor program? BeAPlanner.com shows how real estate investments combined with proactive tax planning can generate significant wealth. However, syndication terms for private real estate partnerships are complicated. They help you assess the benefits of ownership from A acquisition to E exit. A planner wants to know what they are signing up for. BeAPlanner.com with CPA Nathan Ross. BeAPlanner.com.
Song Bobby McGee, I'm just longing to be free. Take me where I wanna be. Big dreams and fantasies, and there are many just like me
with big dreams and fantasies.
Okay, welcome back to more of this week's Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. And we were just discussing, or I guess I was bemoaning, the state of the U.S. Federal debt load. It's truly remarkable. And by the way, I did fix the link. I'm not sure about my math on that change in borrowing over the last 90 days. It's close. But anyway, we're up to 35 trillion, almost 200 billion. And I don't know, maybe it doesn't bother you. You know, I'm amazed we don't have people rushing. I mean, at all levels of income, to do Roth conversions. And as I discussed, I believe it was last week, I think the biggest reason that I get back from clients, if I press them, is, well, you know, this year isn't a good year. I don't have the money. I've got kids that are in a new school. I've got, you know, we needed a new car. We're adding an addition on our house. There's a lot of reasons, but bottom line is it translates to how am I going to pay the tax that's due? Because as you know, and maybe I should clarify, when we have pre-tax retirement funds that are eligible to be converted to Roth, we draw a line in the sand as of this year, and we look at the total that we're going to convert, and we do that based on assessing the fair market value of the investments, and we subtract whatever cost basis we might have to come up with the taxable base that now we're going to calculate tax on. So, you know, depending on what those assets are invested in, If you are someone that has your money at one of the brokers like a Fidelity or a UBS or a Schwab, it's pretty easy to determine the fair market value of what you're going to convert. And, you know, you look at the price that they're selling for on the market end of business today, and that's your sales number. And then you subtract whatever your cost basis is, and that gets you a number that then you apply to your current year's income, other income, in other words, income that's not in the retirement plan. This will be on your tax return, on your 1040, and you calculate the amount of additional tax that you will owe. In other words, you're withholding if you have a W-2 from an employer, so you're probably covered on that income. But let's assume you've got, I don't know, let's use some even numbers so the math is easy. Let's say you've got $100,000 as an example in your 401 that you want to convert. And by the way, we don't have to convert the entirety in 1 year. We can stretch this out. We like to stay within the 22 to 24% tax bracket. We feel like that's a great trade-off because we think tax rates are going to be markedly higher, maybe as much as 2 times, 200% higher. You know, the Congressional Budget Office, I'm going to keep referring to them, by the way, because they are the official referee, if you will, when it comes to assessing the financial impact of legislation on our debt, our annual budget, et cetera. And so back in 2009, when Paul Ryan, the Wisconsin Republican, was still Speaker of the House, he asked them to provide Congress with an assessment, a report, if you will, of what Congress would need to do budgetarily and tax plan-wise to fix the deficit problem. And again, the deficit was nowhere near the $35 trillion it is today. I don't believe, I'm trying to recall, I don't think it was even $1 trillion. Let me take a quick look here at the U.S. National Debt Clock again. They've got a time machine out here that, let's see, we can go back to 2008 is close enough. In fact, that study was based on 2008 numbers. So let me see. The U.S. national debt at that point, man, I tell you what, I know I'm an accountant, but I have problems with numbers this big. So in any event, it looks like it was about $12 billion. Now, I may be off a zero. Maybe it was $12 trillion, but I don't think so. I don't think we hit a trillion till much later. So let's see. We've got, there's 900,000, there's million. Yeah, so it's $12 billion, which is hardly anything if I'm reading this right. And, you know, the ratio of debt to GDP, which that's a delineating factor in most Congress folks' mind, not anymore because it's so out of control. But back in the day, if you were a news party and you were asking a congressman or a senator, well, what do you think about this bill that so-and-so's proposed? You know, it's going to raise our borrowing. And they would always say, well, you know, we're only 60 or 50%, whatever it was, of debt to GDP. So, you know, it's not anything we should worry about. Well, now we're over the 100% of GDP mark. And the report, again, that Congress was given from CBO, it projected that we wouldn't hit the 100% mark of debt to GDP until 2040 to 42 timeframe. So we're well ahead of that mark. And many economists think that we're at roughly 130 to 140% of GDP. Again, depending on your economic assumptions, I think CBO shows us to be right at the 100% mark or just over it. But whatever it is, it's tragic, is the only way I can say it. Okay, enough of the public debt clock or the U.S. debt clock and the national debt tracker. I guess let me just check one thing. I wanted to see how much is, if this is handy, how much each of our share would be. I don't see reference to it in this article. I want to say it's somewhere close to 300,000 each. It may have actually gone over the 300,000 mark. It's hard to get your hands around this. And this is each taxpayer's share, not each citizen's share. That's much lower if you throw every man, woman, and child into that calculation. Let's go to the next article on the news page list. It's on taxfoundation.org. They had several good articles this week, so I added, five from that source. VP or Vice President Harris's tax policy ideas, details, and analysis. And let's take a look. This is all very tentative because, of course, there is no policy on her website, but some of the major tax policy ideas she's bantered about deals with, one, expansion of the child tax credit, which, again, is admirable. You know, I've got a child that would still qualify. We wouldn't qualify for much. I need him to be younger. But anyway, my 15-year-old would qualify. I think I would get $3,000 for that age child. But they're proposing a change in the youngest children. I believe it's $6,000. Yeah, on top of this expansion, Harris would provide, $6,000 for newborns in their first year of life. So that would become the credit for children under a year old, $3,600 for children ages 2 to 5, and lastly, $3,000 for children 6 and older. The Tax Foundation, which is an independent think tank, by the way, and it's got Democrat and Republican congressmen and other government officials that are on their board, it estimates that expanding the child tax credit in this fashion would cost about $1 trillion over 10 years on a conventional basis. The expansion would shrink long-term economic output by 0.1% by removing the credit's phase-in and lengthening the credits phase out, thus raising marginal tax rates for workers along both ranges. Now, you know, I heard a lot of talk about bringing employees and companies and, you know, all the constituencies together. And, you know, what gets overlooked in that fashion is just like the desire for the Biden administration to forgive student loan debt or their proposal to give $25,000 to new home buyers. That's going to exacerbate the problem. It's all the money that sloshes around in the economy after they do these acts of kindness, or they think. And I'll promise you, you provide $25,000 to new home buyers, and all that's going to happen is the price of new homes is going to go up by $25,000. And it's still going to be hard to get a loan, you know, which the problem we have right now is the median income it takes to qualify to buy the median price range home is so high, you've restricted the buyer pool effectively. It's very difficult to qualify. And then further, if you provide, you know, the funding, I guess, I mean, how do you build 3 million homes without a significant amount of government funding? I mean, you can't expect developers to pony up money to buy land and build homes on the come. You know, they want to know, hey, I've got a customer, here's the deposit, and it's going to be a tremendous amount of money that is going to make the debt even worse, even higher. And you watch, it'll be posited or it'll be explained. They'll say a number, it's only going to cost X number of dollars, and then wait for the drum roll, and then you'll hear over the next 10 years. They never assess it as, well, what is it going to cost us total? And why not just say it's a $50 bazillion program? Because that's what it is. And, you know, the worst case is they'll say, well, we're going to have all these homes built in the next 4 years during their administration, but we'll still be paying for it for 10 years. That's the worst case scenario. And that happens all the time with congressional legislation. But in any event, so one of the other things, well, let's look at table one in this article, if you do happen to get a chance to look at it, shows the economic revenue and debt effects of Vice President's child tax, just the child tax credit expansion. GDP will go down by 1%. Let's just pick a few of these. Pre-tax wages will go down by less than 0.5%. So it's still a downward movement. Full-time equivalent employment. This is a number that they've been challenged on. You probably saw the number of jobs that were restated, the 818,000 extra jobs that had to be taken off of the total that they claim to have produced. And I say claim to have produced because most of those jobs, or a large percentage of those jobs, were jobs that came back after the pandemic. So they would have come back. You know, we could have had a monkey as president and we would have gotten most of those jobs back because people had to go back to work. The stimulus money ran out and, you know, people like to eat and like to have a roof over their head, right? So they had to go back to work. The effect on debt to GDP ratio, and this is a good example of when I say that different economists show different levels of debt to GDP. They're saying that it would be 189.3% instead of 100, or instead of 130, which would represent an 8.3 percentage point increase. So what that tells you is, we don't have the money to fund this. And this is just the child tax credit expansion. Harris would also extend or make permanent the expansion of health insurance premium tax credit subsidies that were enacted under ARPA, which I forget what that stands for. Probably has the word affordable in it. But they're set to expire at the end of 2025. It would expand the earned income tax credit for single and joint filers who do not claim children on their tax return. If both proposals match the ARPA expansions over 10 years, permanence for the PTCs, that's the health insurance premium tax credit, would cost about $238 billion, and the earned income tax credit expansion about $160 billion. This is on top now, the $35 trillion, $200 billion we already have. This would add to the annual $2 trillion deficit that CBO projects. It's much too early to see how CBO will score this type of legislation. And, of course, most of this legislation will never see the light of day if the GOP or the Republicans manage to keep control of one or both houses in Congress. Let's hope. But in any event, while the details are unclear, Harris has announced that she would end taxes on tips for service and hospitality workers and work with Congress to establish guardrails on the policy. Well, she's going to have to work with Congress to get permission to end the taxes on tips. I'm not sure, but I think the Supreme Court's been fairly clear as of late that the president cannot unilaterally go spend taxpayer money. That is a job for Congress to do. And we can quibble over how well or not well they do it, but it is in their domain that, you know, we're supposed to originate revenue-generating provisions. Let's see, but even with safeguards, so she's going to work with Congress to establish safeguards, probably to keep accountants from being able to receive tips is what I'm thinking. So my strategy will likely not work. But even with safeguards, a tip exemption would be poorly targeted at low and middle income earners, given the relatively small share of the population working in tipped occupations. Worse, the exemption itself and any safeguards added would add to the complexity of the tax code overall. Well, there's nothing wrong with a little complexity when you sit in our chair, right? My chair. Depending on the design, an exemption could cost around $100 billion over the 10-year budget window. So this is the same 10 years that CBO scores, and again, they just recently updated the 10-year budget through the year 2034. And I've got that on our news article list if you go look for it. Herod also proposes a wide array of new housing tax incentives and penalties. For housing construction, she includes an expansion of the existing low-income housing tax credit. A similar proposal in the fiscal year 25 Biden-Harris budget would cost $37 billion over a decade, as well as a new tax credit for the construction of starter homes. However, Harris would limit deductions for interest and depreciations for large property investors. Okay, that makes sense. That's going to kill the incentive for people to invest in these homes. It's like, you know, do they want the homes or don't they want the homes? They're going to have to make their mind up. Otherwise, it's going to be like those seven EV charging stations that cost, what was it, $7 billion or $8 billion? I think it was $8 billion that the Department of Transportation spent to build literally seven EV charging stations. I got a feeling, I have a prospect that called me this week on one of my corporate housing properties that we operate in San Antonio, and he works at the Tesla plant out there going up 130 from I-10 up to Austin, let's say. And I asked him, I said, now, you know, I see your Tesla charging stations all over town here in Houston and San Antonio. And I said, what are those roughly cost? And he said, well, I'm not exactly sure, but I think I've heard or seen somewhere in the $100,000 a piece range, which I wouldn't be surprised. I guess it wouldn't surprise if you said they were $200,000 or $300,000. I mean, I'm not an engineer, certainly, but it all seems like magic to me. And in any event, I'm thinking, and the government managed to do seven of them. Now, Secretary Buttigieg, I think, or Buttigieg, if I'm saying it right, he did say, well, we've only just gotten started. God forbid that we're going to continue down the path that we've gone with so far. And I understand they've laid the groundwork, I'm sure, to go put in more of the chargers. You can't just start putting them anywhere you want. There's a lot of environmental studies, I'm sure, that have to be done. And there's a lot of getting buy-in from the assorted real estate folks involved. Although I know I go, I give a plug to a local Houston business. When I'm here in town, I use it's called the Speed Queen or the Hubish, I think it's the formal name, Washing Fold there on Derry Ashford, that is the most amazing service. Any of you guys that are in charge of laundry in your world, 99 cents a pound on Tuesday and Wednesday. These folks do your laundry and like to do your laundry. Fold it, make it smell good. It's crazy. It's one of those little, you would think of it as a luxury if you were paying $10 a pound maybe, but at 99 cents a pound, I don't know how anybody does their own laundry, and it's turned around in an hour and a half or 2 hours. It's just crazy. But in any event, they've got about 20, and I say they don't own them. It's totally separate. 20 Tesla EV charging stations right outside that Wash and Fold. And there's also one of the fitness clubs there. I think it's 24-hour fitness. What an amazing concept. I mean, I don't own an EV. I probably will someday. I think we all might. But it's going to be in time, and it's going to be once we have the infrastructure that we need to easily take advantage of that technology. But it's definitely coming, and it was interesting to talk to this gentleman that's been with Tesla for, I think he said, 8 or 9 years. And I tell you what, if you weren't impressed with Tesla before you talked to somebody like this and their feelings about their, not necessarily their founder, but their source of energy, I guess you would say, Elon Musk, they would go to war for that guy. They love Elon Musk. And I'm not saying it's every employee, but this is a guy that'd been with him for a long time, and he just couldn't say enough good things about him. Anyway, back to the Harris budget or the financial proposals. The package would establish a $25,000 down payment assistance program for first-time home buyers. Previously, Biden-Harris administration had proposed a combination of credits and direct support, but the new proposal is focused entirely on down payment assistance. The Harris campaign proposal would provide an average of $25,000 for all eligible first-time home buyers, with additional support for first-generation home buyers. Depending on how the subsidy is structured and limited, the fiscal cost would be about $100 billion over 4 years, based on the plan's aim of reaching $4 million first-time home buyers. By the way, I didn't mention, but the TIP, eliminating tax on the TIP income, was something Trump trumpeted, pardon the pun, a couple months ago or within the past month. So that wasn't new. And I guess if I were Trump, I think I'd raise the ante. I think I would issue an announcement that I wasn't going to tax anybody in the state of Texas for the next 5 years or so, and see if we can't get Harris to go ahead and see that and raise him the state of California or something else. I mean, it's like these politicians, since they're throwing money around, toss it our way. Toss a little bit over here, you know. Many, but not all, of Harris's housing policy proposals flow through the tax code. In terms of non-fiscal policy levers, The Harris plan includes regulatory streamlining to make construction easier, a crackdown on certain pricing tools in rental property management, and a new fund for public housing. That'll be the day when you see less regulation come out of a Democratic government. And I'll believe that when I see it. I wonder exactly what they're talking about. But anyway, reliance on subsidies for supply-constrained housing would be economically harmful for families. This is Tax Foundation speaking, as it would mainly boost demand and lead to higher housing prices. What did I just say 5 minutes ago? While some of her policies do target supply, like the expanded low-income housing tax credit and the credit for starter homes, these boutique tax breaks have not been effective historically. Kind of like trying to control price gauging. Well, that's what she calls it. I think you and I would know it as price gouging, but we're not from California, or most of us aren't. But it's never worked in the history of mankind. But for some reason, she thinks she's going to wave her magic wand and handle price gauging. And at the same time, if it's a pharma involved and she can't control it, she's going to take their patents away. I guess you've seen that quote. She's economically illiterate is the best thing I can say about her. To think that she understands any type of business-related activity and the billions of dollars that get spent by pharmas producing medicines. I mean, after all, these are the same pharmas, no doubt, that created the vaccine that the Biden administration is bragging about, how they saved X number of million of lives. Of course, you know, it's a one-way calculation. They don't look at any of the folks that have passed now because of the vaccine, but that's a whole nother discussion. Instead of reversing that poor tax treatment, the Harris package would further penalize rental housing construction by peeling back depreciation and interest deductions for certain large property investors. Okay, we're at the end of today's show. We will circle back Sunday with our cybersecurity show. We hope you can join us, and then we'll continue the discussion on the tax articles that I just uploaded today when we come on again next Thursday, right here on 700 AM KSEV, the voice of Texas. Thank you.
Thanks for listening, and join us again next week for another edition of Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA.
Where conservatives find